Web. You're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to HealthyLife.net's Visionary Celebrity Series, a place where you get to call in and talk live to a world-renowned expert. Today's show is Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel, a world-renowned expert on mind-body medicine and patient empowerment. So let's welcome Dr. Bernie Siegel.
Hello, everybody. I don't hear another voice, so I hope we're all alive. Anyway, today I want to talk about some interesting things, because I've been writing letters about Donald Trump to the newspaper since he got involved in politics, and it's interesting how the response to my letters have changed. So anyway, that's one part of it all, to get with him, and the other about my birth and childhood, because it reflects on what his was like. I don't know what books I read about him, but it impressed me in the talking about his parents and growing up. It was always, we want you to be famous, Donald. We want you to make a lot of money to impress people. You know, we want you to do things. And I've mentioned it here before, that the study done with Harvard students, did your parents love you while you were a child? And if they said yes, by middle age, because they were all looked up, only 25% had suffered a major illness. If they said, no, my parents didn't love me, 75% had suffered a major illness. Think about that. And when you read about Donald's upbringing, it wasn't Donald, we love you, enjoy your life, do something meaningful, help people. It was Donald, make money, let's impress everybody, make money. And off Donald goes to make money. And I wrote a whole bunch of letters to just about every paper, not multiple letters to the paper, but multiple letters, because they went to a lot of newspapers, letter to the editor saying, because people were having so much trouble with Trump, I said, look, when you're having a problem with him, just say, Donald, I love you. That's what he won't know how to respond to. But if you're yelling at him, oh, you're acting crazy, you're dumb, you're not helping people, you're this, you're that, yeah, he'll fight back. You know, you're guilty. No, I'm not. But if you said, I love you, what's he going to say to you? No, you don't really love me. I mean, how's that going to help anything? So when somebody gets mad at you, and I have found this really works and stuns people, you turn and say, I love you. Even if you say, I'm sorry that I caused the problem, I love you. It's like, oh, what do I do with him now? And these are the three messages from my parents. I'll tell you in a minute, because the first letters I sent in, you know, saying to John Donald, say I love you, say I love you, most of the newspapers didn't publish them. But the other week, our New Haven Register in Connecticut published it right away, because what it basically said is Donald needs love. He needs to be felt that he's loved. We need to care for him. And then his response would be different. And let me see. Yeah, here's my letter. I might as well read you the thing. Say to Trump, I love you. Letters to the editor. Here's a way for people to manage dealing with Donald Trump. Donald did not grow up with love. He grew up with parents who wanted a rich and famous offspring of theirs and their family. Studies have revealed what are now seeing, what we are now seeing. Grow up feeling unloved and you live a life filled with physical and emotional illness and problems. My therapy letters years ago was to say to Donald, I love you, and totally confuse him and stop what he was doing for attention and so-called love. Love is a powerful treatment for everyone. I grew up with the message, do what makes you happy. I'll explain that. Troubles are God's redirections, and something good will come of this. We are all here to help one another meet our needs. Now, I'll tell you, as a kid, my parents loved me, but I was troubled by how they loved me. Because when I would come home from school and say, I got to make a decision. Do I do this? Do I take that course? What do I do? What was the same answer all the time? Do what makes you happy. And it was like, yeah, but I don't know what makes me happy. So my parents forced me to pay attention to myself and my feelings. And I often went to my bedroom, shut the door, and say, God, my parents are no help. What should I do? And I shut the door because I thought if people came in and said, who are you talking to? And I said, God, the next would be the psychiatrist. See? So do what makes you happy. Don't worry about what others are thinking. And what's even more painful was when things went wrong at school. I could get a poor grade on a test. Something happened at school that I didn't want to happen. And I'd come home and say, oh, everything went wrong. It was terrible today at school. And again, what was the message I got? God is redirecting you. Something good will come of this. I thought, oh, God, my parents are no help. So I'd go to my bedroom, shut the door, and say, God, my parents don't help me. Can you do something, please? And I would have a therapeutic conversation with God. And I didn't have to say to people who I was talking to. And I think those things really make a difference. So do what makes you happy. Let me get back to my letter here. Studies have revealed what we are now seeing. Growing up feeling unloved, and you live a life filled with physical and emotional illness and problems. My therapy letters years ago used to say to Donald, I love you, and totally confuse him and stop what he was doing for attention and so-called love. Love is a powerful treatment for everyone. I grew up with the message, do what makes you happy. Troubles are God's redirections. And something good will come of this. We are all here to help one another meet our needs. And that's the exact letter that went, as I say, to my local newspaper, and they published it right away. Whereas years ago, they, were submitting to Donald and didn't want to say anything about him. But now, it's different. People are reacting differently. And I'd say, remember those bits of advice for your children. Let them know. Because the thing that you realize, it's about faith. Abraham hears God say, I'd like you to sacrifice your child. And he doesn't say, oh, please, don't ask me to do something like that. And he goes to do it. And of course, finds that he doesn't have to. And I've often thought about Jesus. When you read his beautiful words in the Bible, I mean, what a wonderful guy and a wonderful message. And why didn't he Because I really thought about this. That's my crazy mind. They put me on a cross. I would have said, watch who you're dealing with and what I can do. And I would have popped out the nails, dropped down off the cross, and said, now do you see who you're dealing with? So pay attention to me. But those people, Abraham, Jesus, and others, had faith. They knew that it was God's intention, and they were letting it happen. So the path would be created, and we would be together. And think about it. And there may be times where you might sacrifice something to help yourself or help others. And I've had, you know, so many experiences that I've talked about here, because I have an angel who watches over me, and I mean that. I've had miracles too. And how do I know that? I was once at a workshop told to do a meditation, so I'm doing it. You will walk on a path, and coming down the path the other way, you'll see somebody, and that's your inner guide. And this guy shows up. I said, hello, what's your name? And, you know, he was just sort of a weird-looking kind of guy, spiritual. I didn't know why he was wearing those clothes. I am Jewish, and I saw he had a funny little thing on his head and white cloth-like materials on his shoulders as he was walking towards me. And he came up, and I said, what's your name? He said, my name is George. I said, hi, George. And I realized what he was wearing were religious garments that we as Jewish people do, a yarmulke, prayer cap, and what's called a tallis, prayer shawl that you put over your shoulders. And so I realized it wasn't so strange what he was wearing. He's a Jewish guy, too. And he's been with me for my life since then. And I'm sure I've said this on this program. He has saved my life and made it an easier trip and journey. And how did he save it? When I fell off a roof and he took me and put me down on the ground on my feet. So I didn't even have a bump or a bruise. It was absolutely incredible. Everybody thought I was crazy when I said I'm fine. Because they could see the ladder broke and I'm on the floor, you know, on the ground. I've said this, I'm sure, here too. When my father was dying, and had told us he's going to die at noon that day, so everybody should come and say goodbye. George said to me, ask your mother how they met. Well, the end of the story was, and she was saying this in his hospital room with everybody there. Oh, I was walking down the beach. I joined a group of girls. They didn't know they had a terrible reputation. Coming down the beach, a bunch of boys. They tossed coins to see who would get whom. Your father got me and lost, you know, he lost and got me. And my father died laughing because of stories my mother told that George had asked for. So keep open. Keep open. You never know what's coming. And let me tell you about my childhood. My mother had hyperthyroidism. That's a thyroid gland, hyperactive. You know, your weight goes, your eyes bulge, everything happens to your body because it is exhausted and over. You know, it's like turning your thermostat up to 110. And she was told, do not become pregnant, it could kill you if you added stress to your body. But what did my mother do? Her parents loved her and she loved her parents. So they said, we want a grandchild. And my mother became pregnant. But her body was so weak, what happens when the pregnancy time is over? Nothing. And they finally said to her, you're not going to survive a cesarean section. We have to reach in and to the forceps and get him out of there. Now, you do a forceps delivery usually when the child has come most of the way down but can't get out through the cervix. It's too tight. And so then they'll reach in, grab the kid's head, especially if it's the head first, you know, with forceps, one on each side over the ears, and pull you out. And the problem with me was I was still way up inside the uterus. It hadn't opened up, stretched, to let the child out because the contractions were so weak because of my mother's condition. Nothing had happened. She said she was just screaming for, I don't know how many days in labor, just lying there screaming in pain. And they finally said to her, well, we've got to reach in and get him out. And she went through this crazy high forceps delivery where they had to reach up. They can't see the kid. They put the clamps on and pulled me out. And my mother's words, they didn't hand me a baby. They handed me a purple melon because I was so battered and bruised that you couldn't even see what I looked like. And I didn't learn this or start researching it until somehow I came across photographs and papers in the family album as a kid when I was old enough to look at them and interpret them and to say, why are there so few pictures of me? Why am I so far away from the camera? You can't even see me, blah, blah. And that's when I began to hear what happened. I was a purple melon. They didn't want anybody to see me or know about me. So they put me back in a carriage, covered it, and put it in the backyard. Then, by that time, I had some medical knowledge. I said to my folks, how come I'm alive? You take a newborn baby and you don't touch it, it dies. It doesn't respond to life. And my mother said, oh, my mother took you, poured oil all over you, and pushed everything back where it belonged 4 and 5 times a day. Then I realized I was the most loved kid on the planet, even though I don't know the reason. And I've told this story before, I'm sure. When I had a massage in the room with many people, because the massage therapist was doing my wife, and he was so busy he couldn't do me too, so his wife did me. A woman's hands on my bare skin with oil. And my shaved head, because I shaved my hair a long time ago. And I went back to being an infant, to a child again. And I mean that literally. I was in bliss. And when I opened my eyes, I saw the woman who was there, who had done it. And I also saw a room full of people staring at me like, is he dead? Has he had a stroke? What's happened to him? He doesn't talk. He isn't answering us. And then suddenly I opened my eyes because I came back from being the infant when she stopped touching me with her feminine hands. And I'd never had a woman massage me before, just the men, because I loved her husband's coarse hands. When he massaged you, you really felt it. And I want you to understand that, how much your birth, your early months and years have meant to you. And if they were negative, reject them, dump them, and start loving yourself. Because you look at somebody, I keep saying, like Trump, wanting to be famous, needing it if he's going to feel worthy. It's so sad that he's got to do that and cause more trouble in order to get attention than help. So I also have a bunch of books in the house by all, you might say, the wonderful people in the world. Helen Keller, somebody who goes blind and writes about it. And just so many others, you know, paralyzed, blind, and out of their troubles, they write about it. And I think a lot of the things I first wrote were out of my troubles, and that's why it was, you know, criticized as controversial. How do you know you can trust him? How do you know he's telling the truth? How do you know? But if you've had those experiences, you know. And I'd say don't be afraid to rebirth yourselves. And I'm serious when I say that. Rebirth yourself. You can reparent yourself. I don't care how you use those terms. Because just the way the local newspaper responded to me years ago, I must have sent the 12 letters in talking about Trump. And not criticizing him, but trying to explain why he is the way he is. You know, don't blame him. Say, I love you, Donald, and help him reorganize himself and do what's good for him and other people. See? And this time I sent it in, boom, the next day it was in the newspaper. So I think they've awakened to more things, including, you know, that Donald isn't quite normal, but it's not his fault. It's what's happening. And see, that relates why, as a doctor, this meant so much to me, that when emotions are involved in your life, they change your body chemistry. Just as the days of the week do. Monday we have more troubles and illnesses than on Friday, because Friday is followed by a weekend, and Monday is a work week coming. So all those things carry meaning. And if you're going to a job that you love, what a difference. I'm sure I've told this story when I was introduced at a big religious gathering somewhere, I think it was in Florida, and they told me there'd be somebody to introduce me, and this nice fellow comes up, but he's dressed kind of like a bum on the street, rather than in a nice suit and tie and everything. And I said to him, why are you dressed this way to introduce me? This is a nice meeting. You know, it's got class. And he said, when they tell you you're going to die, what difference does it make what you wear? And what he told me was, because he was a millionaire, he owned a business, and he used to have a dress code at his place of employment, you know, for all his employees, his business. So he came dressed in a suit and tie, all his employees had to, and he said, I know they didn't like it, but I wanted them looking classy. And then I'm told I could die in a, you know, year or two. So I told all my employees, I'm canceling the dress code. I've been told I could die in a couple of years. So wear whatever you want and be happy. And I'm going to dress that way too. So he put on this casual outfit, and his employees did. And I don't remember how many years it was, but he hadn't died when it was predicted, and he was doing beautifully. And those are the things I learned about how to live your life. You know, ask yourself, how does it feel to do this? And that includes talking to you. I'm not mad at you. But I'm 91 plus, and it gets tiring writing, talking, helping people, but I still feel good knowing I'm going to help somebody. I may not feel so good when I'm getting ready to do it, because I have to, you know, get the rest of the day straightened out and get things done and fit things into time sequences and then pick up the phone and make a call. But I know if somebody walks up to me and says thank you, that means a hell of a lot. And that, by the way, was the third thing on my parents' list. Bernie, why are we all here? What's the point? And my father said, the reason is to help other people deal with their problems. Now, we can choose which people we want to help. See, I can say I want to be a doctor or I want to be a plumber. I'm helping both people. Somebody with an illness, somebody with a blocked pipe. So, again, if you're helping other people, you're contributing to life. And that makes a hell of a difference. It enhances your life and enhances theirs. And I found as a physician, not only being the physician, because this is sad, and I know I've mentioned it on the show, that when you say to physicians, draw yourself working as a doctor, they don't ever put a patient in. I mean it. 90% of the doctors don't put a patient in the picture. They draw themselves, usually a desk with papers, and on the wall, a diploma behind them. Think about that. You go to a doctor, and they're taking care of your disease, not you. I learned to ask people, what happened, you know, in the day or two before you had this happen, in the year or two, month or two. So I knew what led up to their getting sick. You know, like Harvard did to students. Did your parents love you? Or Donald Trump? I don't know what he'd answer if he said, did your parents love you? He'd probably say yes, because of his interpretation of love. And because if he made money, they'd say, thank you, Donald, that's wonderful. My parents often wondered, why did you do those things? But it was just something that interested me or got people's attention. You know, I was having fun, and I wasn't afraid of the criticism and doing it. And one principal out of high school, see, these are the things, if people get to know you really, then they know how to help you and guide you. And a guidance counselor helps you, not what he thinks children should do. It's you. So when I had troubles at school, because my parents moved, and that was a real problem because nobody knew me then. You go to a new school. But what was nice is the school started a new program called Rapid Advancement. If you were smart and doing well, they put you in a class that over the year advanced two classes, not just one. So you had more material taught to you, and then, like if you were starting seventh grade, by the time you were done, you were halfway through the eighth grade. And then they put you in another advanced class, and you were done with, you know, the eighth and ninth grades at the end of that. And I was smart enough to be put into that. And the principal, because my folks had moved, I had to go and explain to him, I was in a rapid advancement class, and you put me in the wrong class. You don't have one in your system. Because I was like at grade 8.5, and they're putting me in eighth grade, assuming I haven't done the other things. And the principal understood when I said it was a rapid advancement class that certain kids at the school who had good grades were put in. So he moved me up another half a year, and I gained a whole year, and therefore went off to college and everything early. But it was a man who, he was good as a principal because he got to know his students and what he was doing. He didn't just say, I can't do that, I can't do that. He tested me, got to know me, and was like more like an uncle than a principal in helping me. And so I moved forward. And there are no coincidences either. How do you meet the person you marry? How do you meet the person who gets you a job? I've talked about that here too. Because one guy that I was talked about, I'm sure, on this show, his car broke down. And I stopped to help him. And what happened? Another car pulls up. And when the guy said he lost his job today, he's driving home and his car breaks down, the other fellow said, "Really? What kind of job do you have? What'd you do?" And he said it. And the guy said, "Oh, I'm just looking for somebody. You got a job." So not only did he have a ride, you know, to the garage to get help, but he had a job, all because he was fired and his car broke down. So that's why I love the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross saying to me, "Burni," with a Swiss accent, "Burni, there are no coincidences." We'll get back to that one. There are no coincidences? Yeah. I'll tell you why I say that when we get back.
Book of Miracles by Dr. Burni Siegel contains inspiring stories of healing, gratitude, and love. Heartwarming and heart-opening, these stories were gathered from decades of his medical practice. The stories are riveting, warm, and demonstrate what we are capable of. They show that we can achieve miracles as we confront life's difficulties. Discover the importance of how changing from the inside out opens the door for a miracle to take place, and more, in Dr. Burni Siegel's new book, A Book of Miracles. Get it now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or your favorite bookstore. Dr. Burni Siegel's A Book of Miracles.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? Would you feel scared or proud? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Would you rather make your own way or spend a lifetime saying, "What if?" Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
Before you go to bed in the middle of the night when you can't sleep, or in the morning fresh from dreams, Dr. Burni Siegel is up ahead of you. The light is on at his writing desk. Maybe, amazingly, he's been mulling over the very same thing you've been thinking about. Introducing Words and Swords, the new series of journaling journeys with poetic thoughts by Burni Siegel, M.D. Each of Burni's poems is paired with space for you to express your feelings and thoughts, providing you with the opportunity for healing and growth, and to laugh a little with Dr. Burni Siegel. Order Words and Swords now at 800-723-0336. That's 800-723-0336.
Love, Magic, and Mud Pies is a brand new book by Burni Siegel, M.D. It helps you raise your kids to feel loved, be kind, and make a difference. Burni, a husband of over 50 years, father of 5 children, and grandparent of 8, shares the gems of wisdom he has gathered from his practice and his own family life. Using his caring, comforting, down-to-earth style, Burni's book answers parenting questions and gives you a wealth of quotes, anecdotes, and parenting tips, delivered with just the right dose of compassion, inspiration, and gentle humor. Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, an insightful, supportive, must-have guide on every aspect of parenting. Love, Magic, and Mud Pies by Burni Siegel, M.D. is available on Amazon.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Order it today. And don't forget to hear Burni Siegel's show, Mind Health Matters, right here on HealthyLife.net.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Hello, everybody, again. It's Burni. Welcome back. They're just thinking of more things that can keep you alive. I'm sure I've mentioned this before. A doctor in Australia, because he was driving around, he's a cardiologist, to people's homes because they were spread out in so many places, it was hard for them to come to his office. It was easier for him to just take a day driving to a certain area and seeing people there. But the one thing he said that made him learn was when he'd pull up to a house and he could look in the window and see a dog, he knew the patient would be doing well. That's crazy, but those were his words. He said, if there was no pet, no dog in the house, I knew that they still needed a lot of help in terms of their recovery. And I've seen that too in our home. You know, the first dog I had anything to do with was at my grandmother and grandfather's house where my folks was living with me and my younger sister. And got a dog. And they weren't into dogs, especially in the house and so forth. And we used to, you know, take it outside so it could pee or poop. And it was crazy. My mother, the way my mother used to do that was, because it was two stories in a one-family house, so all the bedrooms upstairs, and the kitchen was on the first floor. And my mother would take the dog, put a harness on him. Most of the time he had the leather harness around his chest, but hook the leash to it and lower him out the window to the ground. And then he'd walk into the little garden area behind the house and pee or poop and get pulled back in a while later. Most people didn't understand what the hell are they doing with that dog. But my mother wasn't into dogs or cats or anything. And so we kept lowering him and raising him and doing things with him. And it was good for us. Because, again, I had to realize why, in a sense, I wasn't loved as an infant. I can't find pictures. The first picture I saw of myself was age 7 months, sitting in a carriage way off in the distance, so you hardly see what I look like from all the trauma of my birth, you know, that grandma massaged back in place. But that was the first picture I ever saw of myself. And I can't tell if I was normal or not, because it was so far away. But thank God for Grandma. She made the difference. So put pictures of yourself up around your house and love yourself and your kids too. And tell them to say I love you every time they see it. Right now, while I'm talking to you, in front of me are 8 pictures. And the reason 8, two of the sons have, I mean, one of the sons has 2 pictures, because we had 5 children. So it was my wife and I, and we had 3 boys, and then I begged my wife to have a daughter for me. She gave birth to twins, which she wasn't thrilled about. And I remember her saying, if it's 2 more boys, I'm not coming home from the hospital. Thank God, the first one out was our daughter. And the obstetrician made sure my wife knew by saying out loud, oh, what a gentleman, he let his sister out first. You see, and also mind-body. My wife learned she was due on Christmas. She said, I will not be in the hospital on Christmas Day. And I knew she wouldn't be. And she had them the day after. Now, how did she get control of her body? But your mind is powerful. Whether you're dealing with life-threatening illnesses or giving birth to a child. So on the 26th, twins were born. Carolyn for Christmas carols in Keith. It's a handful to have more than one at a time, let me tell you, especially when you have 3 others in the house. but I was happy to have a daughter. Because I kept saying to my wife, I want somebody to take care of me when I'm old. And she really does a lot of things for me, from making doctor's appointments to getting me transportation to all kinds of things. I mean, the other kids help too. But, you know, the feminine helper is different, more like the nursing rather than the one who fixes your computer. But her brother, he's great. He does massage therapy. It's Keith and Carolyn. And I can tell you, when your own child massages you, you go into a trance. It is incredible. And, you know, I mean, he trained. He's a therapist. And he, you know, does other people too. And, but the other day, Sunday, he was here. And boy, when he spends an hour rubbing me, I am in another world. So get a massage. Tell one of your kids to become a massage therapist and then open, you know, a therapy center for them. And people come and get massaged and they all feel better. Touch makes a difference. Yeah. Because studies, again, whether it's saying, did your parents love you, but were you touched, massaged, it changes your chemistry. And I mean that literally. Immune function and other things, too. So pay attention and help your kids. And what helps? You're touching them, having a pet in the house with fur. Petting a fur creature helps your immune function and a million other things. And I noticed the two cats that are still alive and living here, Hope and Princess, they have a routine that takes care of me. I mean, I've told the story how they made breakfast for me one day. The day after my wife died, they walked to the kitchen with me, and I found a dead chipmunk lying in the kitchen. And I knew they were saying, your wife died, so we made breakfast for you. Now, you can say I'm crazy, but that never happened before until that morning. And they walked from the bedroom to the kitchen with me. And since then, they come into bed with me. I don't mean every minute, every day, but they take turns jumping up, snuggling, giving me love, letting me pet them. I feel good. I'm not rejected and alone because I have these loving children, furry children there to give that to me. And a lot of people, again, thought I was crazy until they'd see how our pets behaved and how kind and humanistic they were. Because we literally often had up to a couple of dozen creatures running around the house. And I'm an artist, so most of them have portraits, along with all our children and my wife and myself, on the wall there too. And while I say that, I know I've said this before, but let me mention, I painted myself as a surgeon, cap, mask, and gown. And I couldn't understand it later when I said, why cover it up? Until I read, again, Jung, the reason monks shave their head is to uncover their spirituality. And I know I just went to the barber and said, shave my head. And I learned from Jung why I went and did that, because it embarrassed the whole family. It was when it wasn't proper to shave your head. It wasn't in as it was years ago, you know, that certain time when a lot of guys were shaving their head. But when I did it, it wasn't popular. I really had to struggle with the barber to get him to do it for me. Because doing it the first time was more than I could handle. And he did it. Because I lied to him and said, I'll go away on vacation. Nobody will know you did it. And then I didn't go. and he was upset. But he forgave me because the kids didn't come in and, you know, break his store into pieces. He was afraid. He said, "Your kids will kill me if I shave your head. They're embarrassed by you already." But they knew he was beyond controlling me. So it all worked out. And I'd say again, follow your heart. I don't know who said that one, but let your heart make up your mind. It's back to feelings. So whether it's what you wear, the story I told earlier about the guy who stopped the dress code at work, whether it's shaving your head, what you're wearing, all those things are okay. I am an artist. That's why how things look, I've noticed how it really affects me. I can just go outside and I want to break a branch, pick a flower, you know, to balance the yard, to make it prettier, whatever. And I know it drives a lot of people crazy because I'm so concerned about appearances, but it's because I want things to look beautiful. I'm not criticizing people. I just see ways I can improve life and the way things look, like balancing where things sit in your yard, colors and so forth. So keep that up in your life, the sounds and the appearance. So when you go outside, God says good morning.
Before you go to bed in the middle of the night when you can't sleep, or in the morning fresh from dreams, Dr. Bernie Siegel is up ahead of you. The light is on at his writing desk. Maybe, amazingly, he's been mulling over the very same thing you've been thinking about. Introducing Words and Swords, the new series of journaling journeys with poetic thoughts by Bernie Siegel, M.D. Each of Bernie's poems is paired with space for you to express your feelings and thoughts, providing you with the opportunity for healing and growth, and to laugh a little with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Order Words and Swords now at 800-723-0336. That's 800-723-0336.
What does HealthyLife.net and Amazon.com have in common? Well, they're both available on the internet. They both give great value. But most important, most of our positive program hosts and guests are accomplished authors. And their books are available from, you got it, Amazon.com. Now it even gets better than that. Because when you're listening on air to a HealthyLife.net host or guest, you can go directly to Amazon.com and you can order your book while you're still listening to your favorite HealthyLife.net program. So when you hear an author you like, go to the homepage of HealthyLife.net and click on Amazon.com.
The Book of Miracles by Dr. Bernie Siegel contains inspiring stories of healing, gratitude, and love. Heartwarming and heart-opening, these stories were gathered from decades of his medical practice. The stories are riveting, warm, and demonstrate what we are capable of. They show that we can achieve miracles as we confront life's difficulties. Discover the importance of how changing from the inside out opens the door for a miracle to take place, and more, in Dr. Bernie Siegel's new book, A Book of Miracles. Get it now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or your favorite bookstore. Dr. Bernie Siegel's A Book of Miracles.
What can you learn from exceptional patients? Plenty. No matter what disease you are dealing with, Dr. Bernie Siegel's book, Peace, Love, and Healing, can help you identify the hidden factors that may be stopping you from getting well. What are the hidden factors? Are you ready? Guilt and blame. Find out how guilt and blame is related to your lifestyle and illness. In Peace, Love, and Healing, Bernie, as he likes to be called, will tell you what steps you can take to heal a life and cure a disease. Peace, Love, and Healing. Get it today at fine bookstores or at Bernie's website, ecap-online.org.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
I just heard something interesting. We're going to return this to the show here for 8 minutes. Now, why is that interesting? What the numbers mean? Think of it. I mean, I'm sure I've told this on the show when I said I went, when my wife had a heart attack and I had chest pain just finding her, that she had died in her sleep. And I went to the emergency room because of the pain in my heart. And my number at Yale New Haven Hospital is 389-3966. My wife was born on 9-9. Take 3939 and 66, and everything adds up to nines. And 8 is why I bring this up. It's a new beginning. Every religion has 7 days in the week. So the 8th day starts a new week. Now, why did they all end up with 7 days when the months are different? You know, it's this, what should I say? I was going to say this wonderful stuff that's within us. You know, it's like God creeps in and gives us the message about what today means and what numbers mean. And it's amazing. So keep track. The date you're born, what the numbers mean, do they show up again? And I've said this before, but it's hard for me to keep quiet. When I went to the emergency room with my chest pain, I walk in the door, Yale New Haven Hospital emergency, and I hear a man yell, "Put him in room 9. I haven't even signed in. Put him in room 9. And then they said, "We have to keep you here a day till we get your hospital bed, because there's no empty bed for you." What was the one they got? "Okay, we got your room 819. Now, if you think I'm crazy and that my wife isn't hanging around with me, you're wrong. Because, I mean, I have had so many so-called coincidences where numbers appear and I know where I'm to go, what I'm to do. I haven't taken that wristband off my wrist. What I mean by that is every time you go in for a checkup with anybody, they put a new wristband on, they cut the old one off. But I know it means something, and my wife is with me. And they do change once in a while, because there are two other things, so you can think I'm crazy. But 11 is a day we were married on. 8 is the number for a new beginning, as I mentioned. And the number, like, I get the number with 9s. The next one is like a case number. And what do I see? 3 and 5 is an 8. Then there's a 3 and 8 for 11. A 5 and 6 for 11. A 7 and 4 for 11. And another 8. So our marriage, reminding us we're together, and 8 is the new beginning. And believe me, that sustains me. You can say, "Siegel, you are not normal. You're just interpreting everything to make yourself happy." But those numbers are there. I don't put them there. You know, if it could have been a 4, 6, something else there, but it's not. So I just keep thanking my wife. And the other is, you want to do something interesting. If you have a clock in your bedroom, I hope you do, then if you get up during the night, take a quick look at it. See what time it is. And say, do those numbers mean anything to me? Is it somebody I love who's not here, but who just sent me a message, like their birthday or anniversary or something? And let them know before you go to bed you're looking for a message. I know, I'm crazy. But you can say, "Dear, I'd like a message tonight on the TV screen or the clock to see that you're still around and helping me out." And then see what happens. And how do you know what to do? Always just do what makes you happy. But pay attention. That's not an interesting decision for a lot of people. do what makes you happy. See, not back to Donald Trump. And do what makes your parents happy. Do what makes you happy. Now, it could be doing things for them, making them happy about what you're doing, but good things, not just accumulating money or a reputation. It's doing things for other human beings and other creations, be they people or animals, and you'll get rewarded by it. I know, because I've seen how life feeds back to you what you give it. You can still get tired. Take a nap. There's nothing wrong with taking a rest. Yeah, because I know some people grow up being told, don't waste your time. Taking care of yourself, taking a nap, isn't wasting time. I'm getting used to that now. As I said, I'm 91. I'm tired. I like to lie down. I like to stay in bed with all my love to creation, you know, creatures around me. It feels good. So, stay together with the Lord and yourself. Do what makes you happy. That's when you'll buy a lottery ticket that's a winner. But when you keep working at it, your head gets in the way. So you can ask my angel, George, if you want a little guidance in good numbers. He can help you too. He's a really nice guy. And do I believe in him? Yeah. Because things happened. What seemed crazy. See, I spoke at a Christian funeral. Let me just tell you this one. And Elizabeth Kubler-Ross knew the person who died. And so she was at the funeral also to show her respects for him. And we were both standing outside as the funeral procession was being put together. And Elizabeth turned to me and said, because this was a Christian funeral, Bernie, are you Jewish? I said, what are you asking me that for? Because I spoke at a Christian funeral. She said, no, there's a rabbi standing next to you. And it was George. I know what he's wearing, what he looks like. And boy, see, those are the things that convince me more. See, I could say, I have an angel, and people say, oh, you're nuts. But then when somebody who is a psychic, like Elizabeth, comes up and tells me there's a guy standing next to me and what he's wearing, you know, all I can say is, yeah, that's my angel. So here I am at 91. We'll see what he does for me. And dying, to me, is not a bad choice at times, because when you get tired of living, dying is like taking a nice nap, and you can just leave your body and feel good again. So remember, be good to yourself. Do what makes you happy. But how do you know what's okay? It makes other people happy. It doesn't hurt anyone. You're not offending anyone. You're not depriving anyone. So do what makes you and our Lord happy.